Only around 4% of agencies ever sell, and one of the biggest reasons is that founders accidentally build businesses that are completely dependent on them, and I am definitely one of them. So today, episode 3 of The Agency Diaries, we are joined by Ali. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Pleasure. So Ali, do you want to just go into a little bit about who you are? Obviously, I know you really, really well, but who you are, where you work, and also I think there's lots of conversations that we can have today around agencies, growth, what that looks like, the word exiting as well, which I know when you mentioned to me, I was like, that's not a thing, surely that's not a thing. So I think it's a conversation that will open up lots of different avenues for us to talk about, and one that I know our audience will absolutely love, because it's that unknown, never spoken about, or it was as far as I was concerned. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, excited to be here. So my name is Ali Newton. I'm COO of Unusual Group, where we help agencies scale ready for sale, or whether that's just to make the agency more robust for the founder to be able to enjoy the business that they're running. I'm also author of Agency Exits and started the agency Growth Pad some years ago as well.
Oh, there's lots in there, isn't there? And why are you so obsessed? And I am going to say obsessed because you are definitely obsessed with fixing that agency model, because I started an agency. I kind of fell into it actually, and I didn't really know what I was doing. But as time's gone on, you learn things, you pick things up. But you've been inside an agency, you've grown an agency. So let's start there. What did that journey look like? And how do you then take that into where you are now?
Yeah, so agencies, I mean, it's a tough business, let's face it. Service-based, it always is. But I think with the chaos that agencies kind of have to deal with, it is hardcore. So I started, basically, I was an in-house marketer for a bit. It's kind of fun, but started working with an agency and saw the chaos and thought, I really fancy that. I really fancy that energy. So went and worked for this agency, and within a few months I was asked to start the first sales team, because the founder was doing like one by one sales, bringing them in and feeling just kind of like there wasn't room for him to focus on the business. And me being kind of young and naive at the time, I was like, sure, no probs, I'll start a sales team, that'll be easy, right? Obviously it wasn't. But in the process, you know, we got to a sales team of 9 at one point, which was a lot. We doubled the agency to over 80 staff. We got 50% US, 50% UK clients. And the founder got to do what he wanted to do, which was to be able to go and work on his own mergers and acquisitions. So when you say obsessed, I think that it probably is fair in that I did allow it to kind of eat my whole life. And was just so in the zone of wanting to build this thing and make it really work. And once I'd done that once, I just wanted to keep doing it.
And I think it's the pace as well, isn't it? It's something that I always think, if I ever went back into a normal job, in inverted commas, and the pace slowed down, I would be like, oh, this is quiet. And I feel when, you know, things slow down, with whether it's seasonality or, you know, summer holidays or whatever it is, and things do slow down, I'm like, oh, I don't like this, because it is a much fast-paced environment to be in, I think. So agency world, obviously we met, didn't we? I was watching you do a talk for Building Brands, and I just thought, God, she's amazing. She's seriously cool. And I think, did we say that was 2023 when we first met?
2023,
yeah. We were young then. We're still young. And I think going into, obviously, meeting you at Building Brands and then where you are now, we work together really closely. The work that you do already has really, really helped us. And not just me, it's helped my team as well, and helped us on that sort of growth path. But just talk a little bit about the Unusual Group, what that looks like, scale to sale. What a mouthful. So let's talk about that a bit more.
Love that. Yeah, so it's been a wild ride for me. So I started the agency Growth Pad a couple of years back when I decided, you know, I want to help more agencies do this.
Yeah.
And then when I wrote the book, I met Luke. I was interviewing founders who had successfully sold their businesses. Luke's got 3 exits under his belt, including an incredible one with his last agency to a big, big Brazilian firm. And he then co-CEO'd that firm for a couple of years, 1,200 staff, like massive, you know, when you think about what it's like starting an agency versus being part of one that's got 1,200 people, that's like a huge journey that he went on there. So I interviewed him for the book and we just had this real meeting of minds with the way that we approach things and our kind of agency philosophy, if you like, how we think things should run. And he said, I'm starting this group called Unusual Group. Do you want to come and join? And I just thought, my goodness, there's no way I'm missing out on this. So what we work with is agencies that are looking to grow. We do have a very focused methodology that is around building for exit, an 86-point methodology, and it's incredible. Because it's all focused around making the agency less reliant on the founder, trying to give founders that extra bit of freedom.
Yeah.
But we apply that, and I think this is where there's sometimes like a bit of diversion, I suppose, in how agencies want to approach this. But we apply that whether someone is looking to exit or not.
Mm.
And the reason for that is that if you can build the agency to reduce risk for a buyer, you've also reduced risk for yourself. So whether you're looking to exit one day or not, making the agency run better without you being the bottleneck is the way forward.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so funny, and pre sort of our paths crossing, you get into the agency world and I say to my team all the time, we're not reinventing the agency model. Agencies have been around for years and years and years, right? But we've niched down into our specific industry, into what we do. And for us, that's really, really worked. But it's that you aren't reinventing it. So actually, how do we make that model work really, really hard for what we're doing? Mm. And that's where then you go into whether it's time, whether it's team, whether it's, you know, service, whether it's sales, whatever it is. But it is really interesting, isn't it, when you learn across the board what other agencies are doing, how, you know, because we are actually all doing things really similarly.
Yeah.
But how can you learn from each other as well? That is to me one of the biggest things is, and I know we've spoken about this before, and it's part of why the Agency Diaries was born. It's opening up those conversations around, we're all in the same boat. We're not reinventing what we're doing. So let's just learn from each other. Because whether they're a competitor or not, again, still have those conversations. I think it's really, really important.
For sure, for sure. And I think there's balance that has to happen between leaning into what makes your agency different.
Yeah.
And there are quirks to every agency.
Yeah.
And some of those are not so good quirks, and some of them are actually ones to lean into. But however you look at it, it's definitely easier, more straightforward to be able to make progress if you know what the roadmap looks like.
Yeah.
And the way to learn the roadmap is to study the agency model inside out across lots of different agencies.
Yeah.
And take some of those shortcuts rather than going around this meandering route and hitting all the roadblocks that people have met time and time again before you.
And found a fix. Or found what works. And actually you're trying to work something out that somebody's already worked out. Yeah. So let's talk about that sort of founder roadblock. That's probably a really good sort of segment into that. Obviously, I can talk about what my roadblocks are, but what's the biggest sort of blocker you see with founders within agencies? You know, whether that's time, team, sales, what's the most common?
Yeah, there are definitely some repeating patterns. A big one is all the sales being done by the founder.
Yeah.
And that obviously has knock-ons. Another is not having enough built out on the process side of things. So the founder basically ends up in this roller coaster trap where they're really focused on sales because revenue's gone down. So they're bringing in those sales. That's where their time is. And then, of course, as those sales come through, attention has to turn to delivery, which means that they get pulled off of doing sales. They go on to supporting the team and helping them with the ops piece, helping them with retention. And then that means that the sales piece has fallen down in the meantime. So they have to go back over there and fix that piece. And so you end up seeing this kind of roller coaster, bumpy effect going on.
Yeah.
That has a knock on to how fast the agency can grow, how the team feels, how the founder feels, and how much sleep the founder gets, basically.
I am tired. It's so true, isn't it? And it's something that even we see happens. You know, we're a small agency, we're based in Devon, and as we grow, it's all of those things that we're experiencing as well, which I'm sure, again, a lot of our listeners will be in that moment of, okay, so I'm on sales because I'm a founder, then I come off sales to help with delivery, to help my team, and then we go back, and it just keeps happening. I can totally sort of relate to it because it's something that happens inside our agency. I guess my question is, how do founders get out of that cycle?
Yeah, process.
Yeah.
but also, is taking the steps in the right order. So shoring up that pipeline, and then being able to bring someone in who can shadow, who can get to understand how you sell. The biggest mistake that I see with that is this expectation. You can bring someone in, tell them what the services are, show them a bit about how you do your calls, and then start letting them do it.
Yeah.
Because it feels, and I understand why it feels like it, to the founder, it feels as though they've given the brief, they've shown them the ropes, and it's going to work. But actually, there's this whole missing piece, which is codifying all of the information that lives in a founder's head.
That's really difficult.
It's so difficult because you don't know what you don't know in some respects, in that you've had so many conversations and you've been doing that since day one, you know the right words to say, you know what's going to land and what's not. You're asking the right questions, even though you don't necessarily even know it.
Yeah.
And so the biggest thing that I've found with trying to fix that piece is having a proper process, having actual kind of checklists or bingo cards, as I've kind of spoken about a few times, where you give that to someone who's coming into sales and they can actively work through it, tick through it, and they know that they've got it covered.
Yeah.
So there's that whole piece on that side. And then on the operational side, again, it's having all of these processes. And I think the challenge is when you're a smaller team, it's one thing because everyone working on delivery, they know their job, they can kind of be a little bit more fluid and pivot to what the client needs, and can probably just check in with the founder, see if that's okay, see what else needs to be done. And it kind of has quite a fluid way of moving, which is fine because it helps with pace. But the minute you get over, you know, 10, 12 people, that won't work anymore.
No, because you can't have that direct relationship so easily, can you?
No, and that it's just, it's too many people for the founder to be juggling. And you then get to 12 people, things start to break. When you get to about 20 people, it starts to break again. And you can see these kind of staged waypoints where it starts to go off the rails. So there have to be full-on written processes and SOPs, not just for delivery, but then also for how the team is running as well.
Yeah. And I think with AI, I keep saying with AI coming in, like AI is fully here. It's not coming in. It's like fully embedded. But again, how can you use that to help you with things like processes is really important. And we use, Monday as our project management tool. And again, that makes things really easy for us because it means we can automate things like that, which is amazing. So I can totally see that. I guess my sort of flip to that is, with processes, with conversations. And again, we've had some really, really sort of pivotal conversations between us. But do conversations ever land with founders when they're like, you know, they feel like they've been offended by you, or it's a difficult conversation? They're like, oh, Ali, that's a hard one to take, what you're saying. Because when it's your agency and, you know, you're growing from a sort of small scale operation, and you're looking at processes and things as they build, it's still your baby and you still feel every comment and every piece of feedback personally. And how do you deal with that? Because that's a difficult one in itself, isn't it? With the pushback, I suppose.
It is. I mean, I would say it's very, in fact, I'm not sure I've ever had a founder say, absolutely not, I'm ridiculously offended by this. Because I think in part because when we're having those conversations, I can say, typically, this is what we see.
Yeah.
And because I've worked with so many agencies and the team has so many years of agency experience between them across lots of different agencies, it's kind of easy for us to share, you know, this is the trajectory.
Yeah.
And this is going to be the difference.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that sometimes it isn't difficult to push through those boundaries. But it's a big part, I would say, also of who we actually select to come into Unusual Group. We are selective in who we take.
Yeah.
And that's because if someone isn't prepared to change or to action feedback, then we really can't offer them any impact anyway.
No.
So, and that's part of the fit.
That's the hard bit, isn't it? It's again, when you work with, so obviously we're working with you guys, and it's around how do I then make time to implement all of these changes as well as a full workload. But you have to work through that because you know it's to scale, it's to grow, it's to help. It's, you know, to help my team, it's to help with sales, it's to help with all of those different things. So you have to keep pushing through and you have to be really hungry for it. But again, that comes with challenges as well, doesn't it? And I'll go back to one of our first conversations that we had around, Kate, have you ever thought about exiting? And I was like, never. Never, ever, ever is that something that I've ever thought about. But like you say, you have to create a business that runs off processes and ops. And actually, whether you do exit or you don't exit, things still need to be done properly, don't they, from an agency perspective?
100%. And there's a quote from the book that often comes to mind in moments like this. I was interviewing Mark Wright, who he won The Apprentice, going back a few years, but he won The Apprentice, built an agency called Climb Online, which he and Lord Alan Sugar sold very successfully for an 8x multiple, which is insane. It's a really, really good multiple, especially for at the time. And his quote was around, you have kind of three options, three things will happen to your business. Either you will sell it, you'll drop dead, or the business will go bust. Like, those are the three ways that a business ends. And of those three things, you want to back the sale, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So
cutthroat.
And you know, it sounds full on, but the reality is at some point a business does end, and that could be, you know, 50 years. It could be that you leave a legacy that, you know, someone else continues for you. But whichever route you go, you want to have that option always of being able to choose. You want to have the choice.
Yeah.
You do not want to be backed into a corner. And quite often the pattern is that founders love their business, as they absolutely should. But if they don't kind of build something that can run without them, they do get burnt out. And then that is the worst time to then start thinking, I need to get out of this.
Yeah.
You know, how am I going to sell it? Because your value is low, the risk to a buyer is high, and you're trying to negotiate when you're running on empty.
Yeah.
So if you build it from day one with that exit in mind, you have the option even if you never take it.
Yeah, which is actually a luxury, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's interesting because on one of our previous episodes, I was talking about how, like we said earlier, building a business is one thing, but building an agency, in my mind, because I'm in it, is very different. And I can say that from, you know, we've worked with so many people across the years of KW Marketing. You know, we've worked with, whether it's a sales consultant, whether it's, you know, somebody helping build the pipeline, whether it's somebody on ops. And actually, unless you're in the agency world, it is very different. And yes, some skills are transferable across businesses, but not all at all, because it's so fast paced. It's so, you know, it moves so quickly, and then tech takes over and an algorithm changes and this happens and that happens. And actually building an agency model is just so different. So different. It's service-based, it's time, it's team, it's capacity. You know, it's just not a sale comes in, here's a product, let's go. They've had it delivered. You know, it's definitely a different, completely different ball game that I'm really, really passionate about talking about because, and again, I'll go back to it, we're in sleepy Devon and we are surrounded by some fantastic agencies down here. Do I see them as often as I should? Do I have conversations with them? Probably not. And it's about opening those lines of comms, whether it's locally, whether it's nationally, and sort of giving it the floor that it deserves, really. Because again, you see, you know, whether you're a female founder, you know, females get together and have that conversation, oh, we're a female founder together. I don't think agencies get together that often. And I know, you know, as part of Unusual, I remember one of your team members actually said to me this week, this is why you're part of Unusual, Kate, because you're unusual. I was like, oh, interesting. But it's so true, isn't it? It's just opening that space for conversation. It's not gatekeeping stuff, which I think is really important. And it's just being really transparent about we're all doing the same thing, actually, but we're all in different lanes and we're all in different verticals. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that we always knew it would be valuable for Unusual to have a community, a membership, and to be able to introduce the founders to each other. I think even though we knew that would be valuable, it's completely blown us away with just how much everybody has got from it. And we've got founders in the US, across the UK, Ireland. Like we've got people in lots of different corners and in lots of different parts of agency with different types. And the collaboration, the opportunity for lead sharing, the opportunity to actually help each other with their work has been huge. And like you say, I think agency, it is different. Like when you talk about a service-based business in general, a lot of times your mind might go to like a law firm, an accountancy firm, these kind of quite stable industries where sure there are changes, but my goodness, it's nothing like the landscape that you see in the agency world where, you know, SEO is completely flipped on its head because AI is coming in. Is there even going to be a search engine, or are we all just going to need to optimize for chat? Like it changes so fast.
Are we going to be out of a job?
Yeah. Are we going to be out of a job? And you're changing your service, and even, you know, a lot of agencies now are bringing in some tech arms to try and help diversify as they should be. But with all these changes constantly in agency, I think it's very different because you're not just spinning the plates of running a service-based business and all the standard revenue ops churn. On top of it, you've got a constantly iterating service that is accelerating, if anything.
Yeah, which as a team, we always talk about things change so quickly. How do we stay at the forefront of that whilst trying to do the back end of ops and delivery, which is difficult, isn't it? So I was watching Dragon's Den last night and it was a really good episode, actually. There were some amazing food and drink brands on there, which our agency obviously specializes in food and drink. So I am a massive Dragon's Den watcher. But they always talk, don't they, about numbers on Dragon's Den. What numbers should, you know, tell me a gross profit, tell me this, tell me that. As an agency, I'd love to hear what are the number one metrics that we should be focusing on from a business perspective? Oh, such a question.
It's a great question. So if you're thinking about valuation and exit, you want to have that stability. You need to be aiming for a really good EBITDA.
Yeah. Explain
that's
that.
That's what the multiple is going to be based on. So that's your profit, essentially. It's what the multiple is going to be based on. And it basically, you know, is the indicator of, is all the effort you're putting in worth it?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the key to it. But to get to that being healthy, there's so many different things that you're going to want to be working on. But the headlines really are, the revenue needs to be stable. The churn needs to be low. retainers need to be high with contracts, good contracts.
Yeah.
Regular price increases, stable team that have good notice periods and won't just kind of wander off at some point.
Oh, no. You know,
they need to be invested and really clear on what they're building. Services that clients, you know, love and are resonating with them.
And they understand.
They understand. And just this really strong pipeline piece, that yeah. pipeline and retention piece just has to be in place, because ultimately, like, when you're building for a buyer, for an exit, potentially one day, the main thing they need to know is what is the risk here? And the less risk there is, the more they'll pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds so simple, doesn't it? But it really is that simple. And it's about, like you say, when you know those metrics that you need to focus on, actually it then becomes, okay, so I need to make sure that all of those metrics, I'm monitoring them as well over yeah. time, even though I'm still might be doing sales, or I still might be sometimes on delivery, or I still might be in ops. And again, I'm sure lots of our listeners are in the same position as me, where I'm still navigating all of that. I've still got a team that we're still all navigating that. But knowing where we're going and what we should be focusing on, that's really powerful. And that really excites me as well, because, and again, that's something that we work really closely on, but it's the, what does the next step look like? And it's, how do we get there?
Definitely. And I think this is, so this is an area where I see a lot of agencies really struggle, is they'll very often be a, this is where we want to be in 5 years' time on the numbers. This is where we want to be by the end of the year. Great. Now we're going to go and do all these things. But the anchor that you need is to have those metrics mapped out for what do we need to do this week, this month,
yeah,
this quarter, this year, next year.
Yeah.
And really tying back what's happening day to day to actually get there. The big disparity usually is they've got the big vision and the plan, and then what they're doing day to day is firefighting, wrestling that client back into where they should be, getting that team member doing what they should be doing, trying to get some sales in. And those things don't necessarily ladder up. Plus, with this, you know, change that we were talking about and this fast pace, because things are changing so fast, there are so many distractions.
So many distractions.
And it's, you know, whether that's, oh, there's this cool new tool that might help us speed things up, or, you know, there's all these different things that get kind of thrown into the pot of here's yeah. what we should be looking at. But that can mean that you get pulled away from, actually, is this going to make the boat go faster?
Yeah.
Yes or no? And I think that's one of the big things that we find founders often comment on for us at Unusual, is being that anchor point. You mentioned earlier about making time to work on the things that yeah. we talk about together. And that's such a fundamental piece of it, because without coming back to those anchor points, it's so easy just to get sucked into what you have to do this, you know, yeah. today, this week. The bigger picture kind of falls into the background, even though that's the bit you actually want.
Yeah, and is really important as well. And again, I fall into it all the time. For me, that bigger picture stuff happens really late at night when nobody's around, yeah. when there's no emails going backwards and forwards, there's no Slack messages, there's no clients, you know, WhatsApping or whatever it might be. And for me, that bigger picture piece happens when it's really quiet.
Mm.
And for me, that's when I am also my most productive for those things, because I feel like I have the headspace to do that. I think one of the challenges is making time during your working day to do the bigger picture stuff. Like for me, that would be a massive tick and a gold star. If I could do that in the working week, that would be a luxury. But making time is really, really important, isn't it? So say someone's listening, they've got a 4 to 8 person agency, okay? A digital agency or a marketing agency or a branding agency. They were super, super exhausted, a little bit burnt out. I'm not just describing myself here. But they want a business that works and that they aren't firefighting with. What are 3 things that they should be doing within the next quarter, in your opinion?
Oh, big question, Kate.
I know. I'm sorry. I like big to go for a good one.
So I think the first thing is making that time to anchor. Because without that, nothing is going to change between this quarter and next quarter, or even between this year and next year.
Yeah.
And that's the real challenge.
So time.
Time, but ring fencing that time.
Yeah.
And my recommendation would be actually to use the morning. Do it first thing.
Brain's on.
Brain is on, but also you haven't been pulled into all the crap that you're going to have to deal with today, you know, and that's the moment to be able to see the wood for the trees.
Yeah.
I also think that there's this thing called body doubling, which is, you know, ooh, about bouncing off of someone else, basically, a bit like what we're doing now, where through having the conversation and having that time to have that conversation, it gets pushed forward.
Yeah.
And being able to have it locked in with someone else where you know that hour is going to be set aside to really like fix this thing.
Yeah.
Which is a big thing we do at Unusual with our workshops is, okay, this hour we are going to make this thing turn into actions so that we can actually start delegating it to the team and actually get it moved forward.
Yeah.
Because otherwise there are these big tasks that kind of hang over your head and you're like, we need to solve this, you know, how we're going to develop this new service. And it just kind of sits there.
And lags.
And yeah, lags and drags on and loses momentum and then gets replaced by something else.
Yeah.
And then the list just gets longer.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, a big challenge. So there's that. I think another would be to really seriously look at the team and what their current capabilities are, but also what their potential is. Because as the founder, we hang on to things because we know that we know how to solve a lot of this stuff. We just need some time to figure it out.
Yeah.
But the reality is everybody has the same number of hours in a week.
And even though we think we have more.
Even though we think we have more and we think that things will take a third of the time that they actually take us.
They don't.
All of these, yeah. So instead, we need to kind of make space for our team to grow into. Don't get me wrong, that's time consuming in itself sometimes because we need to kind of take that coaching approach rather than kind of being more directive, which always feels a lot faster. We need to actually make that space to ask questions,
yeah,
get them to think about it and come back with solutions.
Yeah.
So it can take time. But the more we can help them develop into that space and make things less reliant on us, the more opportunity there is to be able to scale. Because what you're doing is creating in those, you know, 4 to 8 members, I think you gave as the example, you're creating your future leaders. And you're creating people who are learning how to build processes, even if they're kind of learning alongside you and you're learning it together.
Yeah.
They're involved in that process and they're invested and you will get a better outcome for it.
And it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I love spending time with you because when we are talking about things, you're my like safe space of you're going to give me some time and you're going to, you know, save some time somewhere else. So actually for me, it gives me that dedicated time to sit down and to think about, okay, so the way that we're doing things and how this process happens, we're going to talk about it. We're going to work out, is it the right way? And as an agency, is it the best way for the future? So I really value the time that we spend together because it gives me the headspace, the time, the freedom to really question things as well. Mm. And that is a luxury. I think when you're growing an agency, having that time is a luxury. And for me, that's the number one thing that I'm always short on is time and time to sort of push things forwards. So it's a focus point that I think is so underestimated. Like make the time, make sure it's blocked out in your diary. Think about, you know, are these processes right? Are these processes wrong? And eventually work with you because you give us that time to question all of that stuff and set things up for the future, which is really, really important, isn't it? So we haven't actually shown our listeners your book. Do we hold it up?
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit more about it. So Agency Exits that you wrote, go for it. What's it about? I mean, we can see what it's about. But
so it's the interviews of 7 different founders who successfully sold or completed their agency, and really digging into what does that actually mean and what does it actually look like. Because I think a lot of times when you talk about an agency sale, there's this kind of slight mystery to it. Like, how do I get from where I am to that being something someone would want to buy? Like, you know, I'm tired running the business and it's hard work, and does someone actually want to buy this at the moment?
Yeah.
Can be kind of a concern. So through those interviews, really digging into what was their mindset? What did they build? What were the challenges? What did they wish they'd done sooner? What are the lessons that they learned along the way?
Yeah.
And then building that into a framework at the end of lessons, essentially, to take forward as you build your agency.
Yeah. And I personally, we were saying before we started recording, that is going to be my summer read. And that sounds like it's so far away, but I need to, because it's time again, be literally in the middle of nowhere to read a book and to have the time to like process what is in there. So that is going to be my summer read. And I am really excited to drill into those interviews, because I've seen some of the interviews, whether it's online, whether, you know, you've posted clips of it, but actually I want to sit and digest it. And because we're now on that process, we're, you know, we're going through that with you. But Ali, thank you so much, because that conversation, I hope, will really help spark some thought with our audience as well. It's something that, like I say, when we first had the conversation, I was like, no way, that like exit, that's not a thing that I want to talk about. And I felt it was a really uncomfortable conversation, but now I feel really comfortable talking about it, because it's about how can we better a business and how can we make processes better, whether we exit or we don't. So it's a really big topic that I think actually talking about opens a lot of different conversations and different avenues to talk about. So thank you so much for joining us today. I really, really appreciate it. And if you want to find out more about Ali, she's always on LinkedIn posting some fantastic content. But over to you, where people can find you.
Yeah, look me up on LinkedIn, Ali Newton Templey, or you can find me over at unusualgroup.com.
And please go and buy the book as well.
Please do.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ali. Really nice to have you here.
Thank you.